Welcome in Paul Feinbaum of ESPN, the SEC Network. He joins us every Monday thanks to Craneworks.
Lift it, load it, grade it, grind it, move it, haul it, rig it, dig it. Craneworks rental works, yeah. The big dog's got it.
Paul Feinbaum on Mac and Cube in the morning is brought to you by Craneworks. Lift it, buy it, rent it, the big dog's got it. Now, Paul Feinbaum.
Paul, always great to visit with you, and we visited with you a little bit last week about just whether we were going to go to nine conference games, and you stated how things had shifted and had kind of reversed and gone backwards, and now it looked like it was going to end up at eight. It is eight. What do you think ultimately was the stopping point, the turning point, that did not allow things to progress to nine conference games moving forward in 2024?
Cole, there wasn't a consensus for next year, and I think that's what a lot of the pundits have misunderstood. The obituaries that I keep reading in national websites and from big-time writers, I think is really short-sighted. This is a temporary decision. It's an interim decision. It's for next year. And while I don't think anyone likes it, including me, and I won't speak for you guys, but I mean, we all want to see more games. And that case has been made ad nauseum. But we'll get there, and I think we'll get there in 25. I don't know all the mechanics of why it couldn't happen next year. Some of the spin, I think, is a little overdone that, you know, we didn't see it coming. Most people saw this coming, and the schedules were already ready. I just think that there wasn't a total alignment. I think that goes from the league to the media partners. And I think Greg Sankey wisely said, okay, if we're not 100% behind this, let's pause. Let's get this thing off the ground next year with so many other things happening, such as the expansion and not only the SEC, but the CFP. And we'll figure it out very quickly. But, you know, if this was a long-term decision, I think all of us would be outraged. But this is a one-year deal, as best I can tell.
Well, Paul, I think that, while what you said bears fruit, Greg Sankey is not supportive of this. He hasn't said that publicly. He hasn't said that privately. I just don't get the sense that he would want the league to have a watered-down product by putting worthless games in November against lower level competition. So do you actually think that Greg Sankey supports the idea that the presidents put forth with an eight game conference schedule?
No, of course. I mean, he telegraphed that pretty early in the week.
Right.
I think he was surprised by the reaction, and really in some ways, Greg, it's the SEC's own fault. Had they gotten this thing out faster, they wouldn't have given all the various parties a chance to pontificate. And I want people to hear what I'm saying clearly. I'm not blaming, but I'm stating. Nick Saban didn't help the cause. When Nick Saban gave that interview a couple of months ago about what he thought was the Alabama new permanent rivals, I think he gave cover to all the other ones out there who did not want to go. And I think those are self-explanatory. And, you know, for Nick Saban, who had been the leader of the nine-game parade for more than 12 years, to suddenly pause, I think it gave some of the other schools who have been less successful a chance to hide behind him. And I'm not saying he was leading the parade, because his comments, he has never specifically said it, but he clearly did not like where Alabama, the lot Alabama was being given. So I just think it was a lot of things happening at once, and I think it also comes down to ESPN, Greg. You know, Greg Sankey knows the mechanics of that organization very well. He's in contact with the leadership, and I just think he felt this was not the right time to make the play. I'm not saying that he's been given a secret code, but I'm pretty sure he knows that in a few months or in 9 months or a year, the climate will be better, and then they can make this decision completely and totally. And that's one thing about the SEC, like them or not, they like to move unanimously. Whether, you know, we in the peanut gallery believe it, it's true. What Greg Sankey did not want coming out of Destin was what the ACC showed, complete chaos, You had seven members threatening to do stuff that they really weren't able to do. And then at the end, everybody sings Kumbaya, and quite frankly, nobody believed it.
Paul, there was other parts of it that I'm not sure a lot of people believed. At least I know I didn't. The waiting on the college football playoff committee's, I guess, thoughts on strength of schedule. I understand that that's a real thing, and that you just we all want to wait and see what it's going to be. But when has strength of schedule not been equated into deciding a national champion? I mean, whether it's the AP poll, whether it's the BCS, whether it's the 14 playoff, whether it's the Golf Digest poll that Tommy Tuberville claimed in 04, like they all have taken strength of schedule into account, and we don't think this is going to go back to some math equation. And then obviously the non-con P5 games are independent, and then the other Power 5 conferences that they're going to be forced to play. Was that all just kind of a smokescreen, or did you believe that any of that was a real reason other than just us going to the stopgap of 8 games next year?
No, I didn't believe it. But one thing that makes the debate more complex, Cole, is even though we all agree we wanted 9 games, we didn't want what Greg alluded to, the fact that the SEC can then, however you phrase the argument or frame it, come back and say, well, look at our record, it makes it hard to battle. And that's why the headlines may seem negative. And the SEC is kind of just shrugging, like, okay, great. You want to take your shots, go ahead, but just check the record book. We don't know what the CFP is going to do. I don't think this is going to be a big deal. And quite frankly, I think the decision will be made before we even know. We won't know what the CFP decides until December of 24. By then, I think the SEC will have had to make a determination. So, it's going to be, if one school gets left out on a strength of schedule, I think there'll be a hue and cry, but I think there's a better chance that the SEC gets another school in as a result of this, as much as I hate to admit it.
But do you think that just looking at the reaction from viewers and, I guess, pundits, if you will, everybody now started to cast some judgment against the SEC about, quote, taking the easier way out, which I think is totally fair. Because if you look at the league, Paul, I mean, we really look at the league, look at Georgia's record, look at Georgia's resume this year. I mean, it's awful. I mean, like, it's not difficult at all. I mean, we went through it. The only team that we think is going to win at least 8 games is Tennessee. Everyone else is up in the air. Every single other team is up in the air. I just don't think the league is as good as everyone seems to think the league is. And that's not disrespectful. It's just not as deep as it once was, at least in the last handful of years. Auburn's down. Mississippi State and Ole Miss are a little bit tricky to figure out compared to where they were 6-7 years ago. LSU's back up. A&M, tricky to figure out. Arkansas, probably down from where they were a couple years ago. Tennessee's up. Georgia's up. Florida's down. You really look at it, the league's not as deep and as competitive as it was 5 years ago. So why do you think that they still continue to believe that they're at the top of the ladder when there's really only a couple of teams that are kind of holding everybody up?
All true, but we're in the sports world, as you guys know, we talk about the winners. And that's really what's kept the SEC in this position for a long time. Yeah, I think you don't really see it, Greg, because you're not in the SEC every week, but Cole sees it. I mean, there's some pretty average schools. I'll be most interested on the 14th of what the schedules look like. Now, we won't have to wait till the 14th because these schedules are already done, as you guys know, and we'll start hearing about them. But I'm guessing that the Georgias and the Alabamas are going to see a lot of quality games because I think that's the sweetener to expand and bring more quality games to ESPN. But it's a fair point. Nobody really wants to say it. I'm glad you did because we could cumulatively or collectively here come up with 10 SEC games that I would not be overly excited about, but I'm talking about conference games, but that's where we are. I'm hoping Texas and Oklahoma bring a shot in the arm because we need it. There are a lot of teams right in the middle.
Do you think, Paul, that we'll get Georgia, Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, Alabama, LSU, Florida, LSU, A&M, Texas, Kentucky, Tennessee. Are those kind of games all going to be jammed in, do you think?
I think so. That's again, all a prediction. It's going to be fascinating, and I'm going to look at, as you guys are, every single schedule and go, what would the ninth conference game have been? And I'm betting more likely than not it's going to be a weaker game. I think they have to do it. The SEC took a lot of heat last week. Not that they can't handle it. It's got so much capital that it can shrug a little bit. But I think on the morning of the 15th, if the nation is going, what did we just see last night? What is this league trying to pull? Then I think that's a more serious problem. That's more important than what we heard last week, because that's tangible. That's the real schedule. That's not some, well, it could be this or it could be that. And I firmly believe these guys are smart enough. Someone is going to take a hit a week from Wednesday night. I frankly hope it's the schools on top, because those are the games we want to see.
Paul, finally, before I let you run, I want to go to the other side of the country quickly, step outside of the SEC. I'm not sure that we thought things could realistically get worse for the Pac-12. And all we heard the entire offseason was, okay, once we get to June, you know, the TV deal should be in place, should have that. There is nothing pointing to any type of reality around a TV deal for the Pac-12 last night. There are certain people speculating that Colorado is out, and now you're beginning to hear some chatter about Arizona potentially being out, both to the Big 12. Brett, your mark's out there scouting Gonzaga and other teams to come in to help their basketball. Obviously, he's still going after other teams for multiple sports. How bad are things right now for the Pac-12?
They're grim. And you know, making a change at the top may have helped perceptively, but it hasn't really changed the dynamics. And you know, as far as George Kliarkov, I don't think there's much he can do. You can come up with any cliche from history, but he was essentially, you know, given command of the Titanic right before we saw the iceberg. And you know, he can steer any way he wants, but ultimately, if you're one of those schools you mentioned, you're probably better off getting out. And the one thing that, you know, we talked about the situation with the SEC and ESPN. It's still an incredible situation. We're talking about a small amount of dollars to sweeten the pie to add a game. We're talking about survival here in the Pac-12. And I know if I'm sitting there leading Arizona or Colorado or even Oregon or Washington, I'm not terribly excited by Gonzaga and San Diego State. Both, you can argue, whatever, you know, they bring a lot to the table in certain things, but they don't bring the wow factor. And the biggest surprise, I think, if you go back nearly 2 years to the day that Oklahoma and Texas left the Big 12, is how well the Big 12 has managed. They got a lot out of having a team in the CFP, but overall, this league has really gained a lot of respect. And I think it's fair to say that it's moving into that coveted third position ahead of the ACC and about 8 billion years ahead of the Pac-12.
How much of it has to do with passion, though, Paul? I mean, because the interest level on the West Coast per capita, just not there relative to what you're going to get in the state of Texas and Manhattan, Kansas, obviously much less densely populated areas, but areas that really care about their college sports. So how much of that has to do with it, you think?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with it, because it's one thing to say we have a great academic institution and you know and we play in a good climate. But, Greg, you're from that area. You know it better than I do. It's not the same. It's not even comparable. And when I'm around different parts of the country trying to explain the SEC, it's easy. I can give you 4,000 examples. Try coming up with one at Cal Berkeley or UCLA in football or any place other than maybe Washington, which I've been to and it's really exciting, or Oregon. And I know there's spots, you know, Washington State on a Saturday night, but overall, it just doesn't resonate the way it does down here.
Paul, always great stuff. Thank you so much for the time, and definitely look forward to having you back next week.
A pleasure, guys. Thanks.
Paul Feinbaum of ESPN, the SEC Network, joining us there on the Bud Light Hotline. He's with us each and every week. Thanks to our friends at Craneworks.
The Rolling
Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen. Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see, good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though, so. That's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.